And the Garden crowd is on its feet.
Yeah, that's great. They love it. I really, truly believe they like what they're seeing from this team.
And it's all over. The 18-game losing streak for the Celtics is off their backs. 117-97, the Celtics defeat the Milwaukee Bucks. Doc's going to sleep well tonight.
Well, can you believe it, folks? A Celtics Stuff Live post-game podcast. You know, it feels like it's been about, I don't know, 19 games since we did one. But, you know, we're bandwagon riders here at Celtics Stuff Live. And on just such an occasion, I think we can bust out a post-game podcast. With me tonight is John Duke. John, what do you think? The Celtics win one, 117-97. Does this dash your lottery hopes?
No. Remember what I said, one win a week. That's all we need, ladies and gentlemen. One win a week. They needed this. They got to get the monkey off their back. You don't want to see a team that's just completely demoralized going through the paces later in the last 6 weeks of the season. So I'm glad to see they pulled this one out. I thought that, if they hadn't won tonight, then the NBA record is for certain in our grasp. And so I'm glad to see they won this tonight without Mike Gorman at the pipes there tonight, but they pulled it out. So I'm not sure if we're going to see Tanguay the next few games. Because,
well, I have to ask you.
Oh, man. Oh, jeez. Yeah, why not is right.
Why not?
I love it, dude. We're just adding to our collection of clips that just, you know, essential clips for any Celtics show. That was classic. You know, Mike Gorman, the poor man, you know, has been suffering through all these losses now. I mean, maybe he enjoyed watching the win with that rum and coke back at home, but, you know, the you kind of want to be there, you know?
Well, and frankly, and we appreciate Gary coming on the show, but if I have to, I would prefer to lose another four or five games in a row, and here Mike's got it for all that time, than go through one more game of why not? It's just me. You know, maybe I'm the alone here, but.
Well, no,
God.
I don't think so. I mean, I think you got to have a catchphrase, and there's something about got it that wasn't quite as obnoxious as.
Why not?
I mean, I don't know why. Well, I know why not. Yeah, that was a little painful, and you know, yeah. Again, thank you, Gary Tanguay, for coming on the show. One of our first big time guests. No disrespect, but Mike Gorman is the man. There's no doubt about it, and he's been a good friend of our show as well. I just, you know, I wish he was there to soak in the win a little bit. You know, yeah. It would have been nice.
Well, and you gotta use those catchphrases. You know, on rare occasions, you don't just pull them out every time down the floor. But let's give Gary a little bit of credit here. He's thrown into a quick situation here, and you know he made the best of it. I mean, he's kind of doing everything over there now. So tonight, but
it was an easier fit for him because when Dickerson had to fill in, he was filling in for Tommy. So you basically had two play-by-play guys and no color guy. Greg did his best to do color, but you know this was a good fit for Tanguay, and I thought he came out with a lot of energy at first. And I was wondering, you know, hey, wait a second, where's Tommy? But he calmed it down, and they found a good flow within about a couple of minutes. Back to the game a little bit, though, the Celtics looked like they were going to get blown out, and they were down by double digits really early in the first quarter, and I was getting really concerned. You know, I was like, it's one thing when Delonte West guarantees a victory, but it's another thing when Paul Pierce guarantees a victory, you know, and Paul Pierce has to make good on that promise. He did tonight, but boy, it was scary. I didn't think it was going to happen.
No, the first quarter was real rough. Going into the game, there were reports that Mo Williams was not going to play. And once I saw that, I said, oh, they're definitely going to win. Because Mo has given this team fits in the past. And when I saw him out there, I thought, oh, here we go.
And he gave us fits tonight.
And wow. Yeah, he's just a tough fit for this team, you know. And hopefully when they get some guys healthy, they'll have, you know, the right players to defend those smaller, quicker guards. But Mo's having a great season right now. And, you know, it's very tough to stop him. He's pretty much all they've got on the perimeter Charlie Bell is a nice player, don't get me wrong, but he's really been the guy that's made them go here the last, you know, few months here without Red, without Villanueva. And once they get those guys back, this is going to be a pretty good team. And a lot of people thought these Bucks would be a real sleeper in the playoffs this year. Of course, injuries have zapped them as much as they've zapped us. But they've got a pretty nice team over there in Milwaukee. And, you know, they've hit a tough stretch here. But, you know, it was the perfect storm for the Celtics tonight. They had, so to speak, you know, they had Milwaukee on the ropes. And they had some guys coming back. And it all came together.
Yeah,
going
really
forward. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, and, well, who does know? I guess we can get to that, you know, as we're hitting the tail end of the podcast. What does this mean for the Celtics down the stretch, you know? But
yeah.
I think there are a couple of things in this game that were very un-Celtics-like. Number one was the single turnover in the entire first half, you know. They converted a lot of Milwaukee turnovers. You know, and it was interesting because, you know, you mentioned, you know, Al Jefferson and Bogut and Brian Skinner before we came on the air. And it's like, you know, Al Jefferson is, I would rather have him than Andrew Bogut. And, you know, I know Bogut had a frustrating game and I know Perkins played some really great defense, but, you know, hey, what a weak draft that was. If we can get Al Jefferson at 17 and then. 15, and then you know, Bo gets a top pick. That's really bizarre. But then at the same time, Brian Skinner comes out tonight and looks like an all-star going up against Brian Scalabrine. So,
yeah.
You know, tit for tat, I suppose.
Milwaukee, it's the strangest thing. I mean, frankly, every time I've seen Dan Gajerich play the Celtics, he's looked like Bill Russell out there,
yeah.
You know. So thank God he was hurt tonight, because I was afraid he was going to go for 50 and 30 tonight and they were going to automatically put him in the Hall of Fame. You know, this is... The Bucks have always given the Celtics fits. I mean, going back even back when Bird played, he had a hell of a time when playing against the Bucks. I mean, I don't know what it is, but, you know, it's always been a tough matchup for the team over 20 years now. You know, and you've had guys like Mo Williams just go off. 31 points, you know, 5 boards, 4 assists, you know, a block shot, a steal. I mean, he's filled up the score sheet. Charlie Bell had a hell of a game. 24 points, 7 boards, 4 assists, and he's a small guy.
Yeah.
You know, they were, that first half, like as you were saying, Jug, these guys, they were running them out of the building. And without Gerald Green, I mean, who knows if they win this game? I mean, I know things were...
Yeah,
they,
no, you're
they played
right.
Very well in that second half. Without Gerald Green to go tit for tat there with Mo Williams at the end of the first quarter, beginning of the second quarter.
Well, Paul Pierce had a part in that, too. I mean, I think Gerald Green in the first half was 6-for-7 for 16 points and 5-for-5 from beyond the arc, which is amazing. And Paul Pierce chipped a couple in, too, and all of a sudden, you know, it was like 11-point deficit was down to 2 points. And, you know, that was really nice to see. And then they led at the half. Boston scored 39 points in the second quarter, and that was basically all Paul Pierce and Gerald Green for the most part. Just an incredible performance, like you said. They dug him out of the hole. You know, Gerald Green, it seemed like in this game, and before now, I'm not sure that he really knew it, but this game, he finally realized how easy it is for him to get his shot off. He can shoot double-teamed against anybody, unless it's Tracy McGrady or somebody else with that kind of athleticism, because this kid gets up so high before he releases his shot. And nobody seems to be able to really contest it. And I think he finally realized that in this game, and I hope we see a whole lot more of it. And he even shot a couple of mid-range jumpers, and I think if he does that a little bit more, it's just going to open it up. And finally, you know, we're going to see him getting to the rim. And once he adds that, once he gets that blend, he's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah. It really is all about consistency with him. You know, I mean, he has these flashes, and, you know, then... You know, he'll put a few games together, and I think we just need to see it over the long haul. But, you know, we saw the same thing with Jefferson. You know, these are high school kids, and they're learning how to play in a man's game. And, you know, it was nice to see tonight. I'd like to see what he can do. He's got a tough road stretch ahead of him. But he's really the player, you know, they need that extra guy that Tony Allen could have been with Pierce and Wally that they can count on, you know, in the wings and to add some scoring and to open things up for Jefferson inside. And, you know, with him and Wally and Pierce, and that's, you know, they could win some games, like it or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. And especially with Al Jefferson going off for double-doubles, 17 points, 10 rebounds tonight, and Rajon Rondo, who I think has made a case to be the starter, like, outright.
Yeah,
he, 3-for-7 from the field, 9 points and 11 assists, 2 steals, 2 turnovers. You know, I know that he's not the shooter that necessarily Doc wants out there, but he's getting a nice little floater going. He's building his confidence. And I don't think it really matters. They have a ton of shooters. What they need to work on, especially with Wally and Pierce healthy, I think maybe Delonte West is the guy that needs to be out there if Pierce and Wally are, you know, on the bench recovering from injuries. I can kind of see where Doc's going with that. But you know, now that Pierce and Wally are back, Rajon Rondo needs to be the point guard. They've got too many shooters. They have to work the inside-out game with Al Jefferson. Finally, Al getting some touches again. At least he had as many as Zerbiak. They both had 12 shots. Al going 7-for-12, Wally going 6-for-12. I was pretty impressed with Wally's play, actually. You know, for a guy that just got sat back down after rolling his ankle on Leon Poe, I thought he looked probably the most mobile he's looked all season, even coming out of training camp. I thought he went baseline a few times. And maybe there was a little bit of a Matador defense factor, but I did think that, yeah, you know, Wally was moving pretty good. Pierce's lift isn't back, but his confidence is. And, you know, his lift is not far behind.
Yeah, I think that, and we'll talk, like you said, a little bit about this going forward, about what you can draw from this. But let's remember, Milwaukee's defense is terrible. I mean, they are not a good defensive
Horrid.
Team. And they can make a guy like Wally Zerbiak, who's slightly more mobile than the Thinker or David. Slightly more. It's kind of, it's iffy. I'm not sure.
Somewhere between that and molasses.
I'd like to see their 40 times. You know, I'd like to see what the Thinker could do at the combine and have Wally run right after him. Anyway.
Suicides. No. I think that, yeah, you got to do some suicides.
You got to, yeah, I'd like to see what they could do. But Wally is, he's a fine player. He's okay. He does some things. Frankly, he's a weight on this team in terms of what his cap number is and what he can do now. I think, you know, in doing that, I think you have to start him at this point. I think you start him and you bring D West off the bench. And
you hope that you make him tradable because he's money with his shot still.
Well,
come on. You know, Wally Zerbiak is nailing the open shot now. I mean, yeah. as soon as he feels right, it's going to be, you know, that 6-for-12 is going to be a regular occurrence. I mean, I think you're right about, you know, the Bucks defense and, you know, where we playing the Pistons. You know, Wally's probably 3-for-12. Yeah. And I can't remember the last game he played, but I believe it was a similar, you know, something like 6-for-18 or something along those lines. And I have to go back and check to confirm that. But I just remember him not having a great shooting night, but taking a volume number of shots and hitting them at key moments. And I got to be honest with you, I think Danny would be smart to try and make a deal, you know, for, you know, maybe package Wally and a young guy not named Green or Jefferson to look for some cap relief. Because there's got to be a team headed to the playoffs right now that wants that veteran, pure shooter who can hit the clutch shot. And Wally Zerbiak is that guy, and he's only got 2 years left on his deal after this. You know, any team going for a championship can absorb that contract.
That's right. And the other half of that thought is that if you do that, you start him instead of Delonte. Delonte's in that second unit, and you force him to be looking for his shot. Right now, Delonte's starting the game. He's starting off as the point guard, and you're bringing in Rondo for either Wally or Paul. And in that case, then Delonte's on the court and he needs to shift his responsibilities. I think you need to have going in, okay, Delonte, you're going into the game and your goal is get open and make your shots. And that, I think, you know, rather than let's start him at the point and slide him over, make him comfortable on the court, and then move him over. I think you need to try to move back to the idea that he's a shooting guard first, who has some point guard tendencies and who can play the point. I think that's the direction we need to see it move in. I think Doc
will do it. He's so balanced. He's the perfect sixth man. He's just a balanced player. He's the perfect sixth man. I've said that as long as I can remember. I've always felt like Delonte West would be a great sixth man on a championship team. I can't say that you can just trade him, to a championship team now and say that he's the sixth man. But I think that that's a perfect role for him down the line for the Celtics, for another team, whatever. I know we sound like we're down on Delonte West all the time, but it's actually the fact that I think so much of Delonte West that I get frustrated with the point guard thing. And I did want to just clarify, I did want to maybe give Delonte a little bit of love in the fact that, it's, while I think that he is trying to assert himself as a point guard in some ways, I also think he's just trying to assert himself as an all-around player, and that has to be commended. It's the team that's giving him the inconsistent message, or the coach specifically that's giving him the inconsistent message about what Absolutely. Position he's going to play and what position he is playing. I know we rag on Delonte, but it's not really, I think he was battling for the point guard position in training camp, and to me it was obvious that he should be a shooting guard then, and I did have a beef with that. But he seems to be settled in with, kind of balancing that role. It's a two-point guard backcourt, and he needs to learn, to be quicker with a shot, come off the picks, and, transition to that scorer's mentality, just like you said, John. But the team has to put him in a position to succeed that way.
That's very true. That's very true. And I don't know that they are doing a great job of that. I agree with you that 100%. I think that there's a lot that can be worked on in that. And part of that also goes in giving Telfair some minutes. And, we saw him, he got a minute 23 tonight. I mean, Celtics won this game by 20. It was pretty much over with 3 minutes to go.
Yeah, but there's no way they were going to risk it.
I know. No, I know. I know why. But I'm just saying that even if you say you want to trade Sebastian Telfair this offseason, it doesn't do this team any good to have him sitting at this point, in my mind.
It doesn't,
not
no,
for a minute
no, if they're going to trade him or if they want to develop him, you're right.
And he needs at least 5 minutes a game.
And he and Delonte would be a perfect combo if they wanted to do the two-guard set coming off the bench like they had been doing with Telfair and Rondo. I actually think Telfair and West is a better match with that because they both have a mid-range shot, et cetera, and maybe defenses get caught up in the fact that both of them have a mid-range and an outside shot. I mean, I know Telfair's isn't great, but he's been shown to knock down the open three from the corner. It's the short three that he can hit, but still, it's a threat if he gets over into the corner and he gets open. If they pay too much attention to Delonte, and they're both likely to have more success on the court together against the other team's scrubs. And so, and Rondo's a creator and he's the energy guy, and I think it's important that he start practicing being the starting point guard with these guys because at this point, in my mind, he's the only guy on the roster that can do that. And there's one player we haven't talked to, and I know we want to talk about, what does this mean for the team going forth? Let's not get our expectations too high about wins, but at the same time, it only takes a few wins to take us out of the lottery. Before we get to that, Ryan Gomes, 32 minutes, 4-for-9, and he is starting to show that three-point range. I think he's only hit two on the season. One was at the buzzer. Hit another one again tonight in the fourth quarter. That, to me, is encouraging. If he can start going, I'd like to see him taking three three-pointers a game. Again, we're talking about development. We're not talking about, tonight was we win the game. But for the most of the season, what we're really talking about is developing these players into what we want them to be, when this team is successful. And hopefully that's next year. Ryan Gomes needs to take three three-pointers and build his confidence. Period, the end. He's practiced it. Eric Weitz told us he's seen it in practice and in shoot-around before the games. It's time to see Ryan Gomes taking three three-pointers a game just simply to show that he can do it.
Absolutely. It makes him such a more valuable commodity at the three. And that's, to me, that's what he needs to show, that he's equally as adept at either position. And that only, benefits the team. It benefits him in the long run. Frankly, I agree with you. I'd like to see them use him more on the block. I don't think that they look for that enough, for whatever reason. But I agree with you, though. I mean, when he's taking a lot of these shots in the last, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, I mean, he's had his heels in the line every time. I mean, what's another 6 inches, another foot, you know? I know.
He's just taking it slow, and I don't blame him, but
no.
I think that he's shown he has the range, so time to shoot it with confidence. The other thing, two other things on Ryan Gomes, and, you know, kind of ties into Al Jefferson. I've seen Ryan Gomes start to, you know, put the ball on the floor and make a move, and he's actually getting by his man a lot easier than I thought he would. And Al Jefferson tonight, he had one instance where he over-dribbled, but I didn't realize that Al Jefferson did have that kind of dribbling ability to get, you know, to create some space. And I think if he doesn't over-dribble, I think, I can't remember who picked him off tonight. It might have been Mo Williams. But, you know, as long as he's only doing three or four and it's all part of one single move with a couple of dribbles, I like seeing that. I think that makes Al Jefferson even more potent on offense. But again, you know, he can't be dribbling five or six times. It has to be all in one fluid motion, you know, to go up for the shot. But both encouraging developments for these two players, one headed to the three and you know, one hopefully moving back to the power forward spot from center. I mean, that's what I hope is going to be the long-term angle for Al Jefferson.
That's a great quote, absolutely.
and I guess that's where that's a great segue, John, because as we're wrapping things up here,
yeah,
let's talk about that, because the way I see it is, you know, Paul Pierce and Wally Szczerbiak are just getting reconstituted into the offense. Neither one of them are 100%. They both looked pretty good tonight. Paul Pierce, you know, we didn't shout out his stat line, but 12 for 19, 5 for 8 beyond the arc, 4 assists. A couple of nice assists. Very supportive of Gerald Green tonight. I felt like they played well side by side. He went for 32 points. You got to wonder, they're only going to get better. The team's only going to get, you know, more comfortable with each other again. Doc said before the game they have to help Wally get shots. You know, they have to create shots for Wally. And then he didn't really expect that to be fluent tonight. I didn't think it was too bad. And it's only going to get better. How many more wins can they get?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Right now we're sitting on 13 wins. Lucky 13. I don't see them winning anymore. They have 31 games left. I don't see them winning more than a third of those games. I think 10 games is a reasonable shot. I mean, you figure 23 wins. I think that puts them right in the mix for the you know, either first or second, maybe the third spot. You know, Webster is a worse record. You know, that who knows what that means in terms of lottery balls or ping pong balls. You could end up fourth or fifth and still get the number one. But I don't see this team winning that many games. They have such a tough schedule. You know, they have the West Coast trip.
They have got five games in a row right now. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, we have five in a row.
So they're going to drop five. They're going to drop five in a row. I mean,
absolutely.
Or they'll probably only win one game. Right now, they're, you know, there you have one less win than Memphis because Memphis lost tonight, but won last night. So, you know, the Celtics basically over the last two nights just stayed even with Memphis, and they're, you know, they have two less losses and one less win. But I think when you're counting, you know, if you're a team headed to the playoffs, then you're looking at losses. And that's, you know, really you want to have the least number of losses if you're headed to the playoffs. But if you're a team looking to go to the lottery, we're kind of inverting that, which means you're hoping to be the team with the least amount of wins. And that's the stat you're looking at. Right now we have one less than Memphis. That's the number to look at. We have more games remaining on our schedule. But, you know, when we've shown to not even win a third of those games, you know, that's really the concern is, like you said, you know, if they only win a third of their remaining games, that's another 10 wins. What's that put them at? 23, 24?
23 wins, yeah.
So what's that, the number three spot, worst-case scenario?
I think, to me, if you ask me, Philly's playing really well.
They've played great since Iverson was traded.
Absolutely. You know, Milwaukee, I think, is going to be much better than they are right now. You know, right now they've got everybody hurt, but they're going to come back. You know, it's minor things with Villanueva.
Oh, as soon as Red is healthy, that's
and Red will be back. And they're going to move out of that where they are. So basically you've got Seattle, but they've still got Ray Allen. And yes, they play in the West, but I don't believe that they can overtake Boston. I think they have enough horses there to keep it going with Charlotte Lewis.
Well, and it's a 7-win differential. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, the Celtics have 12 wins and Seattle has 19. If we're only talking, I mean, Seattle would have to go on an even worse run than Boston just to try and take them over. I think you're right. I mean, Charlotte with 19 wins, Milwaukee with 19 wins, Seattle with 19 wins, Sacramento with 22 wins. Really, there's, you know, Philadelphia with 17. So Philly, I think you're right. They're just going to be too decent. And who are they going to sit at the end of the season to rest, you know, to hope that they chalk up more losses, you know, heading into the draft? Nobody. They can't.
I think the only question we have going forward is, will Pau Gasol be a Grizzly?
Yep.
Come February 23rd. And, you know, basically, the trading deadline is a week from tomorrow. And in a week's time, we'll know. If Pau Gasol is going to be a Grizzly for at least the next 6 weeks, and if that does happen, then we'll have a good idea. They're going to be in this neck and neck with us, I think, either way, even if they do get rid of
Gasol. Well, Pau Gasol hasn't done anything to get him any wins right now anyway. I think Rudy Gay has been the factor in the recent two wins. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, I don't think it matters either way, to be honest with you. I mean, it does matter, but I don't think it really matters in the win-loss column. You know, we're talking a minute number of wins for Memphis. I don't know. Maybe Memphis is about to put something together, but I don't think they want to. So
no. Well, they've been better since Gasol came back.
They have. So,
yeah. I mean, not you know, hasn't been enough to put them in the playoffs. Right?
But we're going to be better with Paul Pierce and Wally Szczerbiak as well. So
right.
We
so
want them to hold on to Gasol in some respect.
Exactly, and not to mention, let's say you do keep that and you do lose the number one pick, you know, you end up third or fourth. That's a pretty valuable commodity you could trade to Memphis for Pau Gasol if you end up with the fifth pick or whatever, God forbid. So, you know, I think it benefits Boston to see Pau Gasol remain a Grizzly for now. And for any number of reasons.
Well,
and
mostly for flexibility, because then they don't have to. Danny doesn't have to feel like he has to make a deal. He can wait till the off season.
Absolutely.
I think the only major move that we're going to see is Gasol, and when Gasol falls, you know, so does everything else. Basically, you know, they're going to. You know, I think a lot of teams are waiting to see what player is going to fall out of the market in that deal. And so, you know, maybe it's in Memphis' best interest to wait until the offseason because they're not winning now anyway very much. You know, they're still going to be in a good position for the draft. And then they can reevaluate where they are in the draft and what they want to do from that standpoint. I think they're crazy to trade Gasol. If they can get Oden and put him next to Gasol, I mean, that's a dream front court. And then they got Rudy Gay at small forward. All they need to do is trade some of that young talent like Hakeem Warrick. Maybe even send out a Kyle Lowry or something like that to try and get, you know, a decent point guard, and they've got something to go with. I mean, you imagine if they traded for Jason Kidd in the offseason and added him to Oden, Gasol, and Gay. I mean, that's off the hook. You know, they're ready to go.
But we're in the same boat.
We are, absolutely. That's why things are about to shake up.
Let's see, you keep Gasol there. You keep Pierce. You add Oden or Durant. You have Jefferson. You have Rondo, you have Green, you have West, you have Gomes, you have, I mean, where does it stop? Telfair? And you can pack some of those guys and add maybe a Kid or a Bibby or, dare I say, a Chauncey Billups. You know, these guys are all out there, and you could, this is all possible. You know, I think if I'm Memphis, it makes a heck of a lot of sense. You're losing games, you're still in last place, and you have Pau Gasol. Why not, you know, keep going the way you're going? And, you know, time will tell. We'll know in 8 days for sure. But I think that makes the most sense of the world to me. But that's also a little bit of wishful thinking, maybe too.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of 8 days, you know, we're coming right up on that trade deadline. Like you said, this Sunday, we're going to be broadcasting our normal time, 7 to 9 p.m. Sorry for the conflict with the All-Star game, but you know, we didn't want to go head to head with the Super Bowl. But let's face it, Gerald Green's going to be out of action after Friday night. Celtics fans. Still listen to Celtics stuff live. We'll be on air. We're gonna have Eric Pincus, so maybe he'll have some information about the impending trade deadline. We'll be talking about that first and foremost. And as always, we're gonna keep an eye, towards the draft, but not to exhaust that topic. We'll be looking at the trade deadline on Sunday, again, 7 to 9 p.m.
And no doubt spending at least an hour and a half on Gerald Green's dunks and analyzing them from every angle and the pumps and the whole get-up. So anybody, you know, any of you guys are old enough to remember the D. Brown. That was a real watershed moment in Celtics history.
Oh, so yeah, it was.
It will be nice to see another participant with a little bit of juice get in that contest and hopefully do some things. So we're wishing Gerald the best for sure.
I think Tyrus Thomas is going to be his biggest competitor just because all the heat he took, he's going to come out with a vengeance. That's what I think. Dwight Howard's too big to make a big showing. Paul Pierce is going to be helping Gerald Green out. So, there'll be a lot to talk about. I guess they were working on some dunks the other day. I can't remember who reported it in the paper today. But wrapping up, again, Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. with Eric Pincus. The Celtics get a win, nip it at 18 in a row. They beat the Milwaukee Bucks 117 to 97. Celtics Stuff Live, it's been another post-game podcast. Hopefully we'll have another one before the next Celtics win.